माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनव यशोधानंद व्रज जन रंजन यशोधानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा यशोधानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोधानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चार वनचारी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nashtapraishu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. So today will be kind of a hybrid class, a mix of this Bhagavatam verse we'll speak on for a little bit, and then transition to the life pastimes and a little bit of zooming into a certain Lila Gadadhar Prabhu, or Sri Gadadhar Pandit. And so before I begin, I'm going to ask for blessings for all devotees, from all the devotees present here and listening online, and especially today on a very advanced subject matter, Gadadhar Pandit, who is non-Srimati Radharani, so it feels like a subject way above my head, but I feel very grateful and honored to speak today on such matters. Today is, in a sense, is kind of like the Radhashtami of Gauralila, but it's not, but Sri Gadadhar Pandit is not as, I guess, well known or discussed about as much as maybe we could. So at least today we can very much think about him and remember him and discuss his pastimes. So we'll start with today's Bhagavatam verse. It's Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text 19. Dhritarashtra quits home. Pratikriyanaya yatsyeha. Pratikriyana yatsyeha. Kutaschit karhichit pravo. Kutaschit karhichit pravo. Saesha Bhagavan Kala. Sayesha Bhagavan Kala. Sarvesham Nasamagataha. Sarvesham Nasamagataha. Pratikriya Nayasyeha. Pratikriya Nayasyeha. Kutaschit karhichit prabho. Kutaschit karhichit prabho. Saesha Bhagavan Kala. Saesha Bhagavan Kala. Sarvesham na samagataha. Sarvesham na samagataha. Please chant. Kutaschit karhichit prabho. Saesha Bhagavan Kala. Sarvesham na samagataha. Nayasyeha. Kutaschit karhichit prabho. Saesha Bhagavan Kala. Word for word. Pratikriya. Remedial measure. Na. There is none. Yasya. Of which. Iha. In this material world. Kutaschit. By any means. Karhichit. Or by anyone. Prabhu. O my Lord. That Asia positively the personality of God Kalaha eternal time Sarvesham of all Na of us Samagataha arrived. Translation: this frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as eternal time, Kala, that has approached us all. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There is no superior power which can check the cruel hands of death. No one wants to die, however acute the source of bodily sufferings may be. Even in the days of so-called scientific advancement of knowledge, there is no remedial measure either for old age or for death. Old age is the notice of the arrival of death served by cruel time, and no one can refuse to accept either summon calls or the supreme judgment of eternal time. This is explained before Dhritarashtra because he might ask Vidura to find out some remedial measure for the imminent fearful situation, as he had ordered many times before. Before ordering, however, Vidura informed Dhritarashtra that there was no remedial measure by anyone or from any source in this material world. And because there is no such thing in the material world, death is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as it is said by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita 10:34. Death cannot be checked by anyone or from any source within this material world. Hiranyakashipu wanted to be immortal and underwent a severe type of penance for which the whole universe trembled, and Brahma himself approached him to dissuade Hiranyakashipu from such a severe type of penance. Hiranyakashipu asked Brahma to award him the blessings of immortality, but Brahma said that he himself was subject to death, even in the topmost planet, so how could he award him the benediction of immortality? So there is death even in the topmost planet of this universe, and what to speak of other planets, which are far, far inferior in quality to Brahmaloka, the residing planet of Brahma. Wherever there is the influence of eternal time, there is this set of tribulations, namely birth, death, old age, and death. Sorry, birth, disease, old age, and death, and all of them are invincible. So this is a very interesting and really a session of the Bhagavatam I like very much. It's very heavy hitting, it's very sharp, it's very to the point, and it's also a culmination of so many events that's happened thus far. It's a very unique setting, and there's much history to get to the point where we're at today, to get to this. It's only 10 to 12 verses, really, where Vidura speaks to Dhritarashtra, but they're so powerful that they completely change the trajectory of his life, just from this one interaction. And it's interesting to look at why is that. And so we see Mahatma Vidura, who is, you know, he was offended by Dhritarashtra. He was a secretary, his brother, and he used that instance where he became offended by him in order to that be his catalyst to go on his pilgrimage. And so he set off. And in the meantime, this Kurukshetra war happened, and we know of Dhritarashtra's infamous, notorious life, and the life of the Kauravas, and all the history that happened there. So finally, Vidura comes back after a long pilgrimage, and his pilgrimage is really, it takes up three cantos of the Bhagavatam, really, the story and the conversations. So we're talking about a very large chunk of time and a lot of spiritual knowledge and understanding, so much so that it's so much of what we have learned is through Vidura and his questions, which he asked Maitreya Muni. So he finally comes back from his long pilgrimage, and all eyes are on him, all ears are on him, they're just waiting for him to speak. What is he going to say after he's been gone for so long? You know, there's no updates back then. There's no WhatsApp updates. What's Vidura up to? We don't know what he's learned. We don't know what his experience is like. So when he finally comes back, what does he say and who did he talk to? He speaks to the one person who offended him. And you would think maybe after so long, he would hold a grudge. He would be upset. You know, if he's speaking sharply, maybe it's coming out of anger. But the very unique thing is that these sharp words are coming purely from a place of compassion and love. And it's really tough love at its essence. And it's heavy, sharp truth. And I think heavy, sharp truth has a very prominent place when it comes from that place of love. And to the point that even though he was hurt, offended, and he knows the history of Dhritarashtra, he wanted the very best for him. So it wasn't coming from a place of malice. It wasn't lashing out. And this was genuine, urgent compassion. And I think it's compassion at its finest. And you can think that everything he learned on his pilgrimage, what would he say? And it wasn't esoteric truth. It wasn't very advanced lila. It wasn't descriptions of conjugal love of Radha and Krishna. It was just, look at you in this pitiful condition. Death is coming. Krishna's time is coming, get out of here, what are you doing? And it hits so hard, and it's so, so important, and it has an immediate effect on Dhritarashtra. And just right after that, gets up and goes, and the three of them leave after a few verses, and then we'll come to that point in a week or two in Bhagavatam class. And so if we put ourselves in the shoes of Dhritarashtra, which might be hard, because we feel like we have not done the same things as him, or that he's a king, he's a historical figure, but what's being said to him is being said to all of us. This frightful situation, death, cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. Srila Prabhupada often say, when speaking to atheists or scientists who were giving atheistic perspective, he said, okay, you have so many cures, but can you cure the disease called death? Everyone just kind of paused. They have no answer, and they can't. And it's that same urgent message with which Vidura is speaking of here, Srila Prabhupada brought to us. And if you hear how devotees felt when they were with him, they always would mention many things, but one thing is a sense of urgency. Srila Prabhupada had a very strong sense of urgency, that he was speaking right through you, looking right at you, knew everything about you, and his words were just full of compassion, wanting you to understand that this place is not our home, and rather we have to understand that time is coming, and time is coming for all of us. And that's what he's saying here to Dhritarashtra. No one wants to die, however acute the source of bodily sufferings may be. And there's no remedial measure for either old age or death. And it's kind of, it's like a slap in the face to hear this. There's the one devotee who's written a book on Srimad Bhagavatam called Book Bhagavatam, who's taken each canto and made an acronym. So you have a word, and each letter will stand for a certain few chapters and so on. So for canto one, he describes it as slap. And slap. Yeah, slap. And the S stands for the first six chapters. Srimad Bhagavatam was titled A, or L stands for love. The next few chapters talking about the love of Kunti Devi, Bhishma. A stands for attainment of the supreme. This section here with these great personalities are leading back the spiritual world. And P stands for Krishna, so like that. And he has it for every canto. But in that, he quotes a really nice quote from Srila Prabhupada on the morning walk to Giriraj Maharaj. This is May 1st, 1974. If the father slaps, the son never protests. He knows that it is good for me. Similarly, a devotee never is disturbed when there is suffering given by Krishna. So from a devotee's perspective, death is no longer something fearful. And I think when we put ourselves in Dhritarashtra's shoes, we see even though he had so much protection around him all the time, he was extremely fearful. And to the point he can be in such a pitiful condition that all he has left is his enemies, quote-unquote enemies, taking care of him. But he's still afraid. And so if we put ourselves in his shoes, we realize, well, who here is afraid of death? And you look at yourself and you say, maybe to some degree. There's an assembly of Vaishnavas, so it's probably less true here. But everybody to some degree is afraid of death. If not, you're afraid of maybe a death of a loved one. I've seen that so much as of recent. You know, it's a very heavy thing. But death is also Krishna, and this was quoted in that purport. And that's there in Bhagavad Gita 10:34. I am all devouring death, and I am the generating principle of all that is yet to be. The purport Prabhupada says, as soon as a man is born, he dies at every moment. So here he's saying, death is not just something that happens at the end of life. It's happening every single moment. And we even see that scientifically, our cells are changing all the time. Every 7 years, you have a whole new set of cells. We're constantly changing, and this process of changing bodies is happening as we speak. Thus, death is devouring every living entity at every moment. But the last joke is called death itself. That death is Krishna. So as a devotee, if you think, okay, death is also Krishna, you look at the altar and you see the smiling face of Sri Shyam Sundar, Krishna Balaram, and then you think of death. Wow, how do you put the two together? But as a devotee, if you think of them as the same thing, then the fearful form of Krishna, which we worship every day, or the form of Krishna which dissipates all fear, which we see every day, is that same fearful death. So as a devotee, once that realization comes into our mind, and we fully realize that, death is no longer something to be afraid of. It's simply Krishna himself in a different form. And we see in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna showed his his universal form, which is very fearful. And Arjuna said, I prefer your two-armed form, the Shanardin. This is much more beautiful. But understanding is the same thing. He also says, in regarding to time, time I am, the great destroyer of worlds. And I've come here to destroy all people, with the exception of you, the Pandavas. All the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. So as a devotee, now thinking about death and putting ourselves in this position of Dhritarashtra, we notice that death is the ultimate giver of urgency and actually the ultimate inspiration, as grim as it might sound. When we are confronted with the notion of death, all of a sudden what really matters comes to play, and what doesn't just becomes secondary. So that's also what it sparked the Srimad Bhagavatam, the notion of death of Pariksit Maharaj, and that his time was only so short, that he had 7 days. And so he sets the prime example of what to do. What do I do when I, you know, he asks the question, I ask you about my immediate duty. Tell me of the unalloyed duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically of those who are just about to die. And the answer is to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's what he did, and attained perfection. In the purport, it's also described the example of Hiranyakashipu, who's like the example of someone trying to escape death. Also another example, like if you put yourself in his shoes, it's very difficult, because he's an almighty demon. He's like, I'm not Hiranyakashipu, I can't put myself in his shoes. But in a sense, he just tried to escape death in a very, very grand way, which we might do in small, minuscule ways. And it's interesting that his, well, that step of the pastime goes, but his son, Prahlad Maharaj, had a very sharp and cutting view of what it's like, even if you live 100 years. Are you really living 100 years? Even if you have so much time to practice spiritual life, do you really have so much time? So I'll read through a few verses which he says to his classmates. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 6th chapter, text 6 to 8. It says, every human being has a maximum duration of life of 100 years, and that's very maximum, really. But for one who cannot control his senses, half of those years are completely lost, because at night he sleeps 12 hours. So there we go, from 100 to 50, just like that. Being covered by ignorance, therefore such a person has a lifetime of only 50 years. And in the purport, Prabhupada describes that actually this 100 years is, you can think of it relative. The ant lives 100 years, Brahma lives 100 years, just that time is relative. So even not just talking about a human's 100 years, we can talk about any living entity. And then the next verse, in the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are wasted. Similarly, old age, when one is invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. So how many years are we at now? I don't know. At this point, why even bother? And then finally, yeah. One whose mind and senses are uncontrolled becomes increasingly attached to family life because of insatiable lusty desires and very strong illusion. In such a madman's life, the remaining years are also wasted, because even during those years, he cannot engage himself in devotional service. So after all the different phases of life, from boyhood to youth to old age, and the time we'd waste knowingly or unknowingly in different phases of life, even the phases which we might think, okay, this is my phase that I'm, you know, fully mature and I can practice spiritual life, doesn't happen that way. So he really gives the reality of what it's like, even if you live 100 years. But who says you're going to live 100 years? That's even considering that. So even if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to live 100 years, but what's this idea of time? Forget about it. But if you notice that death comes at any moment, and you act from this place, then automatically Krishna consciousness will come in one moment. And that's really the power of understanding the realization of Krishna as time and Krishna as death. Even though it might seem quite grim and quite, and that's not beautiful, I'd rather think of Krishna some other way, but noticing Krishna takes forms in many ways, and that's what he says in the Bhagavad Gita, helps us understand him better and surrender unto him much more quickly. and fully. So what's the remedial, not the remedial measure, but what is there for us to do? Noticing this realization, and I think it's just following that footstep of Purushottam Maharaj, that we just have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, hear Krishna Katha, and specifically today hear Gaur Katha and Gaur Gadadhar Katha. This is his appearance day. So I want to kind of pause in the Bhagavatam section now and speak a little bit about Sri Gadadhar Pandit and specifically his Leela with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's very, very special, very sweet, and also very instructive. So there is a lot to be said about Gadadhar Prabhu. There's a lot to be said about his pastimes. Much of his pastimes are also described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, his early pastimes. Today, the most inspirational one to me was his pastime of wanting to break his Kshetri Sannyas vow. So I'll speak about that. And also, I think when we read and understand and listen to Gaur Katha, we understand that some of these pastimes might seem so esoteric and above us. But really, the more you get into it, you can boil it down to very, very important essential truths. They're very applicable as Vaishnavas, because it's the Lords themselves coming down as devotees to directly instruct us. So Sri Gadadhar Pandit was always together with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were born around a similar time in Navadvip, and they spent their childhood together, they studied together, school together, and this happened, you know, throughout life. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he joined him in Puri, he stayed in Puri. He's one of the few personalities in Gaur Leela that was there in the beginning of Mahaprabhu's life, all the way towards the end, even if his physical association with Mahaprabhu wasn't always present. He was generally in the same area, which is very rare. We don't see that with many associates of Mahaprabhu. So, the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes their relationship. There's a very deep relationship between Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar Pandit, because this is the relationship of Radha and Krishna. Looks a little bit different in Chaitanya Lila. So the CC describes this as Panditera Bhava Mudra Kahana Nayai Gadara Prananatha Nama Haila Yayai. No one could describe the characteristics and ecstatic love of Gadadhar Pandit. Therefore, another name for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Gadadhar Prananath, the life and soul of Gadadhar Pandit. No one can say how merciful the Lord is to Gadadhar Pandit, but people know the Lord as Gadai Gauranga, the Lord Gauranga of Gadadhar Pandit. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally worshipped the deities of Gaur Gadadhar, and those are there in Gurjuna. We have seen those deities. They're very, very beautiful. And he writes a verse that really, I think, describes why it's important to celebrate Gaur Gadadhar and to understand their Leela, and to hear those wonderful narrations. He sings, Smaragoda Gadadhara Keli Kalam Bhavagoda Gadadhara Pashka Charam Chunigoda Gadadhara Charyukatam Bhajagodhrumakanana Kunja Vidhum. Remember the wonderful pastimes of Gaura and Gadadhara. Become a servant of Gaura and Gadadhara. Listen to the beautiful narrations concerning Gaura and Gadadhara, and worship Lord Gaura, the beautiful moon of the groves of Gaurdruma. So hopefully we can do a little bit of that today. I'm trying to research, well, I have to say first, honestly, it's when I found out I was speaking today, my first question is, Gadadhar Pandit? I know nothing about him. Is he even Radharani? I have no idea. And so this class, whatever I'm going to be speaking on today, is really credited to other devotees. I took a lot from notes of Chaitaratma Prabhu. He gave me pages and pages of research he's done, and I've heard different lectures by various devotees, so this is all in credit to them. I'm just a puppet repeating their research and repeating their realizations. But the first question is, well, who is Gadadhar Pandit if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is both Radha and Krishna? Srila Prabhupada says that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahayanya, Radha and Krishna combined together as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as Srila Sarup Damodar Goswami has said, Radha and Krishna assume oneness in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That those two transcendental identities united and form Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So then who's Gadadhar Pandit? And the answer is, he is Sri Lachiradaram as well. It's described in Gauranadesh Deepika, it is described that the person who in Braj was the daughter of Sri Vrishabhanu Raj, namely Srimati Radharani, is now celebrated as Sri Gadadhar Pandit. And if that's the case, the next question was, well, why did she come down separately? Why did she come down as well as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming as Radha and Krishna, or Krishna in the mood of Radharani, to experience Radha's love for Krishna? And so we'll circle back to that. There's a few leelas that kind of talk about the essence of that question, but it's a very important question. So throughout the life of both Gaura and Gadadhar, there is differences in personality, just that there's differences in personality between Radha and Krishna. And these differences displayed in leelas show very much a lot of sweetness, just as we see in Krishna Leela. So as a young, intelligent and witty pundit, Nimai Pandit was quite a person, and he had quite a personality. He loved to debate, he loved to challenge. Some would say he was arrogant, and Gadadhar Pandit was the opposite. He was gentle, he was mild, very renounced, not interested in worldly things, even from a very young age. And there's one leela described in Chaitanya Bhagavat that coming home from school, Gadadhar Pandit was coming and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu crossed paths with him. And wanting to debate, very fiery, Gadadhar Pandit wanted nothing to do with it. He always wanted to debate based on logic and of things of this nature. So he said, Gadadhar Pandit, answer my question. Okay, here we go again. Please tell me according to scripture, what is the meaning of liberation? So according to scripture, he gives the answer. When one is no longer in contact with material nature and there's no affinity for enjoying matter, that is liberation. Wrong. And then they argued back and forth. The Gadadhar Pandit really just wanted to go on with his day. He didn't want anything to do with this. He put his hands up, covered his ears, and walked away. And one other explanation also says that he said, when will the day come when you will become a devotee, Nimai? When will that day come? And Nimai Pandit responded, just wait, one day will come that I'll become such a great devotee that even Brahma and Shiva will come to see me, to take darshan. And we see that, and we hear that in Gaura Aarti. So that the demigod devatas would come and worship Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And so this is Leela, and it shows God is very arrogant, but it also describes that sweet relationship which they had. In a sense, you can think of Gadadhar Pandit, at least in that point, it's like they couldn't live without Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, couldn't live with him. But it changed as Mahaprabhu took his initiation, and everything kind of changed from that point on in his life and in his pastimes. I want to focus a little bit more on Gadadhar Pandit's life later on, and more when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, when he was also present in Jagannath Puri. There's a few very important characteristics to focus on in his life. One of which is he was very fluent in Srimad Bhagavatam. He was very much a scholar, a relisher of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was known for speaking so sweetly on Srimad Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally would spend hours a day listening just one-on-one with Gadadhar Pandit, hearing the wonderful narrations. It said that they would come together, as he said in kind of a later pastimes in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that Lord Gaurasundar spent much of his time with Gadadhar Pandit listening to his readings of Srimad Bhagavatam at Yameshwar Toka. That's where the deity of Prahlada Gopinath is, in the garden. And he heard the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj many hundreds of times, but every time he would listen with rapt attention. So you can just imagine that here's Lord Gauranga hearing the same pastime hundreds of times, over and over again. And not only that, as they would speak and hear Srimad Bhagavatam discuss, they would cry tears of ecstasy to the point that it would wash away all the writing, all the ink on the paper, and the book would just become washed away in that way. So I found this very interesting because when I think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I think of a Yuga avatar of Nam Sankirtan. And the first image is Mahaprabhu and Nadia with the Panchakatva and all the devotees chanting on the streets and doing Harinam Sankirtan. But often the first thought that comes to mind is not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, devotees sitting, or the personality sitting in one room, relishing Srimad Bhagavatam, the same Krishna Katha over and over again, hundreds of times, to the point he's crying in ecstasy. And I think he sets that example very much, that even though he is the Yuga avatar spreading Harinam Sankirtan, that same Sankirtan was also present in the discussions of Srimad Bhagavatam, which he relished very much, and also very much different from different books in the later part of his life. And when we think about this pastime, we kind of come to the answer of the question I asked earlier. Why did Srimati Radharani come down separately, combined the Arshatani Mahaprabhu? So Gadadhar Pandit is Radharani. The Mahaprabhu is coming in the mood of Radharani. Therefore, Gadadhar Pandit doesn't overtly take on the mood of Srimati Radharani because he wants to allow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to experience that Radha Bhav. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, he has such a journey to come to the stage of Radha Bhav. And he's showing by example that it's not, even though he is Krishna himself, he could come and immediately in his first few pastimes experience Radha Bhav. But he went through the phase of being a scholar and being so-called arrogant, to humbling himself and taking initiation, to taking sannyas for the greater purpose of preaching and setting an example, to instructing devotees, hearing from devotees, showing his humility, running to Vrindavan, and all these pastimes, all the way until the last final 12 years in Gambhira, where he could experience Radha Bhava and finally get the essence of it in Sri Shikshashtakam. So that being considered, Gadadhar Pandit's role was very much there to support that, and that was the internal mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's a very nice description that when we look at this pastime of when speaking Bhagavatam, that Krishna wanted to realize the prema of Srimati Radharani, and only she can experience it and speak about it, explain her own bhava. Only Srimati Radharani can explain that. But out of humility, she's not going to explain her own bhava in Krishna Lila. What's not possible in Krishna Lila then became possible in Gaura Lila. On the pretext of speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, as Gadadhar Pandit was able to speak on the bhava of Srimati Radharani and speak on Srimad Bhagavatam in such a way that Mahaprabhu can hear directly from the lips of Srimati Radharani to understand what Radha Bhava is. So in this way, that Gadadhar Pandit was able to facilitate this for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Another very important aspect of his life was his worship of the deity of Gopinath. And this deity of Gopinath, Tota Gopinath, is still there in Puri. And I also, once reading the story afterwards, I felt quite dumb because I've been there several times and I never really understand the significance of this deity and how important it is. But it's really the life and soul of Gadadhar Pandit, who worshipped the deity of Gopinath his whole life. Towards the later end of his life, after Mahaprabhu left this world, there was so much separation from Gadadhar Pandit. And you can imagine, by knowing the separation that the gopis felt, that Srimati Radharani felt when Krishna left Mathura and then Mata Dwarka, it was so, so intense that they're barely hanging on to life. There was barely any, the only thing that Gadadhar Pandit had was he had this worship to Gopinath, and he had the instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when later a devotee named Srinivas will come and please teach him Bhagavatam. And these two things kept him alive, the purity. So it's said that his separation was so much for him that his body became bent. And you can imagine that you're so, and the modern word is lovesick, but you're so lovesick that your body literally becomes bent. There's so much separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to the point where he cannot serve Gopinath anymore. He cannot put a garland over his head, chandan on his face, dress the deity properly. So he said, I cannot do this anymore. You'll have to find somebody else who can worship you properly. My body is just not capable. So in a dream, Gopinath came and said, I only want you to worship me. and you are my confidential servant. But other pundits that I cannot reach, what do I do? And he said, no worries, tomorrow in the morning everything will be solved. The next morning he went, and Krishna had sat down. And it's very unique. It's really the only, at least that I know, the only deity that sits down. And if you see a picture, it's very beautiful. His legs are crossed, leggings, playing the flute. And this way, Gadadhar Pandit can continue to worship him. So this is really the result of his vows and his worship and the great determination he had for worshiping the deity. Another important lesson we can learn. But really the most important, not important, which is my favorite lila between Gaur and Gadadhar, is the one where he attempts to break his vow. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took many attempts to go to Vrindavan, as that was his internal desire to go home, to go to Vrindavan and experience Braj in the bhava of Srimati Radharani. And his first attempt was after initiation. In ecstasy, he was chanting his Ishtamantra, he was saying, Krishna, where are you? And headed to Mathura alone at night. But in the sky, you heard a voice. Your chance will come later. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you have come to this material world to propagate Nam Sankirtan and freely distribute love of Godhead. Please return to Navadvip. So like this, that was the first opportunity. Could not go. He went back to Navadvip. After he took sannyas, as he was walking away, chanting the sannyas mantra, his only thought was, I'm going to Vrindavan. This is my second opportunity. But Nityananda Prabhu redirected him to Shantipur, and that's that lila. And there, Mother Sachi had two requests. While you're here, let me cook for you. The first and foremost, most important motherly request. And second, please stay in Jagannath Puri so that you're close enough that I can hear news from you every day, so she's not too much in separation. And Gadadhar Pandit was observing this. And for him, he just didn't want to leave Mahaprabhu's association. So he thought of a brilliant idea. He said, Lord Chaitanya is my life and soul. How will I ever be separated from him? But now that he knows he's going to Puri, under his mother's request, how will he ever leave Puri? It's his mother's request. So I will take the vow of Kshetra Sannyas, meaning I will not leave the Kshetra, this dham, this area. And that's the Sannyas vow. So always stay in Jagannath Puri. And of course that vow is there to worship Gopinath. That was secondary for him. Primary, he just did not want to leave Mahaprabhu's association. It's a pretty good idea. It's quite an ingenious way. And but it kind of backfired. So on the third attempt, and this is described in the Madhya Lila in the 16th chapter, Lord Chaitanya wants to go back to, or wants to attempt to go to Vrindavan. And hearing this, Gadadhar Pandit said, oh my god, this is it's backfired. You can't leave Jagannath Puri. I took a vow to stay here in Jagannath Puri to be with you. And it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Pandita kahe yahantumi se nilachal Kshetra Sannyasamore Yokara. Sorry, wrong verse. It said in here that no one can understand the loving intimacy between Gadadhar Pandit and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gadadhar Pandit gave up his vow in service to Gopinath just as one gives up a piece of straw. So what happened? Basically, as Mahaprabhu was leaving, in this attempt to go to Vrindavan, he took a large entourage of all of his associates. Everybody was going together, including Gadadhar Pandit. And when he went, he was forbidden by Lord Chaitanya. So you can't leave your vow of Kshetra Sannyas. You took a vow to be here. It's a very serious and heavy thing. How can you come with me to Vrindavan? You must stay here. And the response from Gadadhar Pandit is very interesting. And it brings up a very interesting debate and a very important point. It's Pandita kahe, yahan tumi se nilachal. Wherever you are, that is Jagannath Puri. So he got him there. Wherever you are is Jagannath Puri. So I'm not actually leaving Jagannath Puri. I'm going to be in Jagannath Puri all the time because I'm with you. Kshetra sannyasamora yoka rasatal. And let my so-called Kshetra sannyas go to hell. And that's his words directly. Yoka rasatal. Kshetra sannyasamora yoka rasatal. What a thing to say. Can you imagine? Let my vow go to hell. Krishna, wherever you are, that's Jagannath Puri. this vow doesn't mean anything. I'm only doing it for you. And it's quite an ingenious statement, to be honest. But it's very interesting terminology to give for a vow, because here is Gadadhar Pandit, and who we know as his nature, which we described before, very mellow, very gentle, very Shastric, very renounced. It's not like that for someone to just give up their vow in such heavy language. Let my vow go to hell. So what can we understand from this? And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disagreed, but he said, no, don't worry. Well, Mahaprabhu said, then I will be the recipient of you breaking your vow. I don't want that. That's not a good scenario. Don't worry, I'll just kind of walk along the side with you, and I'll just say I'm going to see Satchimata, and no one will think I'm with you. It's under my accord. But he was ready to leave everything to be with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there's a powerful argument happening here. And it's a heated debate, really. And it's very good points on both sides, because this is Radha and Krishna discussing and making very important points. But from this discussion, we learn something very, very important. Gadadhar Pandit, his purpose of his vow was to come face to face with Krishna. And that's what it's described in Shastra. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the Shastras should be servants of these two principles. So the overarching principle is always remember Krishna and never forget him. Any vow, any rules are subservient to this one principle. So that's the point that he was making. That was his argument. And we might also find ourselves in that place too. You know, a common thing is, I don't have time to chant my rounds because I'm so busy with service. But the service is for Krishna. It's to always remember Krishna and forget him. So can I just finish him tomorrow? These internal dialogues probably play in our mind quite a bit. And so in this discussion, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finally said, you are wanting to go with me is simply a desire for sense gratification. In this way, you are breaking two religious principles, meaning disobeying my order and breaking your vow. And because of this, I'm very unhappy. And so he wanted to teach the world, really, through Gadadhar Pandit, that vows are our greatest wealth. And if you want to please the Lord, follow these vows which you take, which are very, very helpful in order to understand and attain Krishna. And he wanted to teach that vows are our most precious asset. It's the most precious thing we have. To teach that if you honor your vows and your commitments, and you are chaste to your vows, you are chaste to your commitments, amazing things can happen. And really wonderful realizations come, and really empowerment and mercy from Krishna comes at that point. And at this point, Gadadhar Pandit fainted, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, Srupa Damodar caught him, and he said, just look at this wonderful Leela. And you should know that Krishna himself violated his own promise just to keep the promise of grandsire Bhishma. Intending to make my promise true, Lord Krishna broke his own promise not to take up a weapon at Kurukshetra. With his outer garment falling off, Lord Sri Krishna jumped from his chariot, picked up a wheel, and came running at me to kill me. Indeed, he rushed at me like a lion going to kill an elephant, and he caused the whole earth to tremble. Those are the words from Grandfather Bhishma. So similarly, tolerating separation from you, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has protected your vow with great endeavor. So it was also very typical on Mahaprabhu's part to leave Gadadhar up under his association. But he did it for this much greater and important lesson, that the lesson of keeping our vows. So really that's the main point here. And if you think about vows and you think about the life of a devotee, you realize that maybe the life of devotee is just a series of vows. From this time we begin, also known as initiation, throughout one's life. We have our primary vows. An example is first initiation, second initiation, sannyas vow, sit in front of our spiritual master, devotees. It's a really serious commitment. There's other vows, just the secondary vows, ashrams, marriage, serious commitments done in front of the Lord in the fire, and other vows like Ekadashi and festival days which we follow, and sales are smaller vows, their internal vows we take, Kartik, Purushottama, certain things we might want to read more, chant more, vows we make within our own heart to uplift our spiritual life. And it's sort of Krishna's trick in a way, because we start and we just not able to come to the temple, we associate with devotees, and before you know it, there's no more space left. Krishna took up the whole thing, because we've made so many commitments to him. And so their example can be given of a pool. If our consciousness is like a pool of water, and it's, we throw a pebble in there as a first commitment. Maybe that's our initial association with devotees. And then as we continue in spiritual life, a boulder comes in, our commitment to Guru, and more rocks come in, and more commitments happen. Eventually, the whole pool is full of rocks. When a material desire, a leaf from the material desire, floats in to enter that pool, it gets kicked out, because we've made so many vows to Krishna that there's no room to break those vows and let material desires enter. And so our consciousness becomes fully Krishna conscious in that way, through the medium of making vows. And another way to see a vow, and vows are very, they have great tribulations in them. There's, you know, a vow is always, a serious vow is always, it's going to be difficulty. That's the nature of the vow. And the first stage in taking a vow is excitement. Initiation, this is great. And it's like going up a mountain, you see the foothills. Okay, I'm excited, I'm ready for a journey. When you come to the foothills, and you're there, and you look up, there's this huge mountain, and you think, oh my God, what am I getting myself into? You know? But you've come this far, so you climb. And in the middle, you're struggling hard. And you think, how can I make this? You look up, there's still so much to go. But then you look down, and you notice, actually, you've come so far. So keep pushing. And then you keep going, at one point you get to the peak. And at the peak there's an amazing view, because you've honored your vow, and you've kept it up for so many years. And you've put in so much endeavor. And at that point Krishna rewards you, and that's the point where realization comes, and Krishna reveals within your heart, after following your vow so sincerely and strictly. And the vow no longer becomes a burden. At that point the vow is something that has brought you so much closer to Krishna. So what keeps us going in our vows? It said, yasya deve para.
So I just wonder your perspective.
You can say that the perspective of reality is like, what's the point of the vow? Like, it's not even that it feels rigid for him in a sense. It's there. He made the vow to be with Krishna and to always remember Krishna. How is this going to help him if Krishna is leaving me? I took this vow to remember him. I think the middle point of feeling like a vow is no longer a burden, and no longer something that is just your everyday rigid principles and practices you're doing because you said that you're going to do it 20 years ago and I still have to do it. I think there's an aspect of renewing your vows that has to come time from time, renewing your commitments. And then with some married couples, they renew their vows even yearly, you know, on their wedding anniversary. So you really remember, and when you first make that vow, you make that commitment that be very strong, and the reasoning for why you're doing it might be very strong. The enthusiasm might be very strong at that point. But that can wane with time, as it naturally does. So when you renew those vows, especially if those vows were done into commitment with a certain person, like one's marriage partner or one's guru, the vows are based on a relationship, ultimately. The vows are based on a relationship with Krishna, but through a certain person. If the vow is with a guru, an initiation vow, it's really through the mercy of our spiritual master that we fulfill those vows, ultimately. And so our endeavor might feel rigid, and maybe that in that rigidity of that endeavor, there's some lacking or block in our relationship with the person who's actually helping us attain that vow, and to whom that vow is actually for. So I think renewing that vow in a sense of reconnecting in the relationship that we made the vow to, this initiation vow, and reconnecting with our spiritual master in the form that we're able to, and often that form might be through Hani and through prayer. And that renews the vow, because ultimately the vow is just a medium that we can connect to a deeper relationship, ultimately to have a deeper relationship with Krishna. Yes, for the
really amazed. Your understanding is so good. Very nice. Thank you for well preparation. Srimati Radharani, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur faced the challenge of inviting the governor, at that time Calcutta governor was like head of the anti-British. So the suggestion was given that he will not take any food, he only eats meat. Everybody heard it. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur at that time he made one beautiful comment. He said, order Calcutta hotel to supply the meat. But then one of Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Maharaj opposed. He suggests that we can't do this. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, Srimati Radharani has only one mood. How to please Krishna anywhere and everywhere. Anywhere, everywhere. So if you look at from that angle, then Gadadhar Pandit is not even, yes, it says he was displaying the Rukmini's mentality, submissiveness. No, it's the only one mentality. How to please Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu, if he exhibit the Radharani's Dakshina Bhav, sulkiness, then how Mahaprabhu going to taste it? So for the purpose was to give Mahaprabhu full-fledged relishment of Radha's mood. So that's why he took that mood. He can have any mood. Yeah. Radharani has all the moods. He's the personification that possesses all the moods. But where it's applicable, she plays according to that. So we can reconcile on that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was bold. He said, I'll do anything because we are follower of Radharani. So same way.
Thank you.
And I like your, actually, I was also meditating about this vow. But I also thought another angle to look at it. You gave a very nice explanation. I really appreciate it. I think you should keep on going like that. That the purpose of the vow is more important than the vow. Because the purpose of Gadadhar Pandit to be with Mahaprabhu. That was the purpose. The bhav of Kshatra Sannyas, as you say, that when external challenges comes, because bhav means it's required commitment, it's required effort. These two are the legs, two legs of the bhav, any bhav. There has to be commitment. Without commitment and effort, no bhav will sustain. So in that category, the purpose was to be with Mahaprabhu. So when external challenges came, inner growth took place in a very deeper way. The purpose is fulfilled. Because Mahaprabhu at the end, he said to Gadadhar Pandit, what is the purpose of your Kshatra Sannyas or giving up Kshatra Sannyas? He said, go to hell, as he mentioned, Rasatal. Mm-hmm. So then Mahaprabhu gave a very nice counseling, I remember. He says, but what is your purpose? Your purpose to take Kshatra Sannyas or giving up to please me. So why can't you ask me what will please me? And if you leave Kshatra Sannyas and come with me, it will not please me. So you are not doing the purpose of your bhav. Then Gadadhar Pandit was very happy and he stayed. So that has to be like focus in my life too, in everybody's life. It was the purpose of the bhav. Thank you, very nice.
Thank you, thanks for the comment. Okay, Jai. Kantarashma Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Gadadhar Pandit Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.